It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll Alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This is Issues 2023. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Wichita School Superintendent Kelly Bielefeld. Welcome to Issues 2023. And Kelly, I hope I got your last name just about right. Was that close?
Yes, you did, Steve. Yes. Nice job.
Well, you started this job just about a month ago, as I understand it, after years of serving several school districts. And I believe you started your teaching career at Goddard. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep, back in 2000, taught at Goddard High School when there was only one high school in Goddard, taught there for about 5 years, and then got into administration right after that.
All right, I would like to start today with the recently the Wichita Board of Education hiring Everyday Labs to look into what's called chronic absenteeism in the schools. Now, how long has this been a problem? This is the first I've heard about this, Kelly.
Well, across the nation, it's been a problem, for a while, but especially post-COVID, all districts, big and small, have seen, an increase in chronic absenteeism. By definition, it means that a student has missed 10% or more of school days, and that's for any reason. So, being sick or being unexcused and truant. And it's a marker that's important because when kids hit that level, especially year after year, they end up missing so much instruction and so much content that they get further and further behind. So the board agenda item specifically was about a technology program that's kind of automated that we're going to pilot in 13 schools, and it's going to allow us to track it a little more real time. So that, if we're 20 days into the school year in September and a student's missed 3 or 4 days already, they may be for legitimate reasons, but we want to notify that parent through a text message or an email or a phone call and just say, hey, just so you know, here's the impact, the long-term impact of chronic absenteeism, and hopefully we can, drive those numbers down and get kids back to school and in the seats and learning.
Just anecdotally, have any idea what some of the reasons are that the kids aren't making it to class?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I mean, I think for a good, year and a half, we were the ones sending them home. If they were exposed and or had a, direct contact, they were quarantined for 2 weeks. And we were able to do remote learning during that time, so we were able to keep kids somewhat engaged. But I think all of our society a little bit got pretty skittish about, going anywhere sick or even with a cough or a sniffle. So I think that's a piece of it, that coming out of COVID, there was just some habits lost of showing up every day to school and a little bit more, in tune to, it might be a head cold or allergies or, whatever, that I think families were a little bit more cautious about sending kids to school. It's a fine line. We don't want to expose kids to other illnesses and things, but we also know now that as much as we can, we want kids learning and back in the classroom.
All right, let's talk about you for just a second. Where are you from, and what's your education, Kelly?
So I grew up in Abilene, which is about an hour and a half from here, and from there I went to K-State and graduated in secondary education. So moved down here, like I said, I got a job at Goddard teaching, and then went through WSU for my master's and got my master's in building leadership in 2005. And from there, I had several different principal jobs. So I started off at the Catholic school in Kingman, Kansas, St. Patrick's, and was principal there 2 years, and went to Andale from there, was elementary principal, and then Oaklawn, which is in South Wichita, but in the Derby School District. And that entire time we had lived in Clearwater. So in 2014, I was able to go be the principal where my kids went to school in Clearwater, and went there and was principal in fourth through eighth grades for 4 years, and then was moved up to assistant superintendent and was assistant superintendent in Clearwater prior to moving to Wichita in 2020, and took the job here in Wichita as executive director of college career readiness. So did that for 3 years, and now I have this job.
And how is this much different than what you were doing before? I mean, obviously, you've been pretty much a superintendent a couple of times here until you got to this job.
Well, yeah, district level leader. But yeah, this is obviously quite a bit different. You know, the size of Wichita being the biggest district in the state, and by far the most diverse district in the state, you know, that is unique. And, you know, a superintendent job like this, where, you know, we have an amazing group of district leaders that, you know, take care of a lot of, you know, in a smaller district like Clearwater, the district office, I think, was about seven people, you know, and here we have, you know, literally hundreds of people that help to do all the ins and outs of, you know, everything from budget to HR to, you know, handling our schools, day-to-day operations, facilities, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, quite a bit different, but going very well so far.
How many students are actually enrolled in Wichita Public Schools right now, or coming up?
Last year we were at 47,000. Right now we're still in the midst of enrollment, so I don't have a number for you today.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm a little premature on that one. But how does 47,000, how does that compare with years past? It's my recollection that at times we've been over 50,000 here in Wichita. What do you think?
Yeah. I don't know exactly when the high point was, maybe 10 years ago or so, but I think it was, you know, 52 or 53,000. I think the district was right around 49 to 50,000 pre-COVID. And then when COVID hit, we lost a considerable amount of enrollment, about 2,500 students, and we've kind of been flat since then. So, you know, the impacts, I think, the impacts of that in all educational formats has been felt, you know, from private schools to homeschools to public schools. So it shifted priorities for families, I think, and families have found either different options or other options. And, you know, we'll probably continue to see that impact for a while, I'm guessing.
All right, we're coming out of the pandemic. What's going on with test scores? Have they improved since the pandemic?
It's a kind of complicated answer. So for state assessments, you know, we took the year that Governor Kelly closed schools, we took that year off. We didn't test any kids. The following year, we saw a significant decline across the state and in our district. And this year, we saw a moderate increase, a slight increase in our state assessment scores. Another metric, though, that I think is important, that I think a lot of that translates to a lot of people outside of education is our ACT score. Our average ACT score as a district kind of leading up to 2020 was improving and increasing, and we had gotten to, I think, 17.1 was our average, and pretty much all of our juniors in the district take the ACT, so regardless if they're college bound or not. Again, COVID came, we saw almost a full point decrease from that to the next year, so we were at, I think, 16.1, and then this past year, we were at 16.9, so we're not at our pre-COVID levels, but we bounced back in a big way, and I think we'll continue to see that number go up as we just reacclimate kids to learning, reacclimate kids to school, and are able to focus on, you know, the important pieces of learning and reading and writing and computing. So,
classes begin August 15th. Are you ready?
Yeah. I think we're definitely ready. It's been a very positive start. You know, we brought about 400 new teachers in yesterday. We bring them all into Northwest High School and have a big event where we, introduce them to the district and train them up. All of the rest of our teachers will be back on Thursday, August 3rd. We're excited. We've got a lot of new faces around the district, but a lot of great energy moving forward. So we'll be ready for the kids.
You have a student body there that's, can we say, very diverse or diversified, whatever. Well, you know, ethnic demographic profile, Wichita students. What does that look like?
Yeah, that's it. It's not exactly, a third of Hispanic, white, and African-American, but it's close to that. I think our Hispanic enrollment, is somewhere around 38-39%, Caucasians around 30%, and African-Americans somewhere in the mid-20s, and then an Asian population that's actually growing, that's, 5-8%, I believe. So, definitely diverse. I just was talking with our director of ESL, English Language Services, and last year we had 112 different languages spoken in the district. I didn't even know there were 112 different languages, honestly, but that's a pretty baffling statistic. By far the most of our English language students are Spanish speaking in the home, but we have a large immigrant population from all over the world. A number of students that are families of refugees or students of families that are refugees. So diverse when it comes to economics too. Right around 74% free or reduced lunches, which is our metric for poverty. So about 3 out of every 4 students in the district, is living in poverty right now. So that diversity is a challenge, but it's also a strength that creates a great environment in our schools of, really empathizing and understanding one another and working to get along. That's the real world outside of a school, is a very diverse global economy, and that's what we need our kids to be ready for.
Yeah, as what I was thinking while you were telling me that, does that reflect what's going on in society as a whole as far as demographics, as whereas Caucasians come in as actually, I guess not a minority, but not the majority of the demographics. Is that kind of what's going on out there in the real world then, you think?
Well, I would have to speculate. I don't know for sure. It definitely feels that way in Wichita, and maybe even more so in Kansas across the state. But I do think we need to prepare our students for a future that is full of diversity. I think you think of how interconnected the globe is and how, the remote work allows us to work with all kinds of different people all over the globe. That's what our kids need to be ready for, to be future ready, is really have that exposure to all sorts of different viewpoints and different types of people.
And you're listening to Issues 2023 on the Odyssey radio stations, and our guest is Wichita School Superintendent Kelly Bielefeld. I noticed your professional background seems to be in teaching kids who may not pursue college after they graduate from USD 259. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, yes and no. We need to prepare kids for the future, and that is definitely a moving target. I think some of the factors that have come into play as far as college goes and college going kids, one is there's a lot of great jobs that don't require college degrees anymore, that a certificate gets you access to a pretty good career right out of high school or even with a little bit of technical school. So I don't know that that's always been the case historically in our economy, and that is becoming more and more true. I also think a large factor for kids that we hear a lot from juniors and seniors as they're thinking about post-secondary options is debt. It's something that I don't know that I thought much about when I took student loans, 25, 30 years ago when I was in college, but students are very in tune to that. And so the idea of, going straight into college, not, incurring a massive amount of debt because of the cost of that is one that students are really thinking through. So I think some of the cool conversations we're having in our Wichita community, though, are about how our employers can can work with kids in that area. So youth employment's a big passion of mine, and one I've worked with the Workforce Center a lot on, getting kids connected to local employers early on in their careers. And that could be volunteering, that could be internship, that could be a number of different things that we currently do. But then I think employers have figured out that if they can create that relationship with those students and then maintain them through things like tuition assistance as they go to college, they can create a long-term, 8 to 10 year relationship with an employee where they're investing in one another over the years, as opposed to kind of the old model that many of our students still do, that you go straight out of high school, 4 years of college, and then go get a job somewhere. So the ability to work with WSU and their applied learning with WSU Tech and some of their opportunities to connect our kids to local employers. We have a workforce shortage in Wichita, and we export a lot of our kids to other communities, for college and for jobs. And if we can keep those kids here, whether that's straight into the workforce or to one of our higher ed institutions, I think our community is better off all the way around.
Let's hear the term choice when it comes to schools, choice for the students. But that involves magnet schools, as I understand it. Exactly what are magnet schools here in Wichita?
So our magnet schools are different thematic schools, K through 12, that offer parents and students the ability to hone in on a particular either a topic or a career path that they feel passionate about. So, we have magnets in, environmental sciences and STEM, science, math, engineering and technology, fine arts, performing arts, careers. All sorts of different options for kids and families. It is a way that we can create pathways for kids that they're hopefully motivated by, and then choices for parents that they see as something that's going to help their student get a competitive advantage upon moving on to the next step of their education, whatever that may be.
But to be clear, the magnet school doesn't mean you've just do that. I mean, it's the basics are also they're part of the curriculum in magnet schools, right?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, they take the same state assessment, same ACT as everybody else. It just is a way to kind of hone in on the focus of something that the kids might be particularly interested in. Some of my own kids are at a leadership magnet, so they do specific things around leadership. And then there's other options with different focuses. So yeah, they learn all the same curriculum that they do in the other schools. It just has a particular focus with some added curricular work and content around that focus.
Sure. And the schools were physically upgraded after the 2008 bond issue passed. Is it time to upgrade again? Are there things that need to be done with our schools?
Well, that is a long time between bond issues from 2008 till now. If you look around the suburbs and the different communities around Wichita, pretty much all of them have passed bond issues since 2008. We have 94 attendance centers. The average age of our buildings is 60 years old. So we have ongoing needs that we continue to try to address, and we've been able to do some things with the COVID relief money that we call ESSER money. That influx of money has allowed us to have some flexibility to do some projects for some controlled access to buildings for school safety and some remodeling things that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So our schools are safe places. We've done a good job, I think, over the years of maintaining our facilities well. When it comes to, schools like East High and North High, they are pillars of the community. They're important for us to keep because of their, significance to tradition and architecture and everything. But they also are not cheap to maintain. So that continues to be a pressure that we'll feel, I think, for the future.
Like the rest of the community, are you seeing problems with attracting new employees?
This year it's been better. the answer is yes. I mean, I think that all of education has suffered over COVID, and then you see employers all over the city, you know, struggling to find people. I feel like our HR department has done a good job this year. We still have open positions. We won't have everything filled, but we're sitting at a good place and a much better place than other urban districts around the nation that I know are really continuing to struggle with high amounts of vacancies and doing kind of drastic things in order to address that. So, you know, it's not great, but we are not in dire straits. We'll have, you know, a teacher in every classroom, and that some of those will be long-term subs, but we'll be able to do what we can for kids from day one this year.
Always, educators always talk about wanting parental involvement and so forth, but it seems like the flavor of that has changed across the country. People have become a bit more outspoken and about the content that their children are being taught. And what's the proper role? What should parents be in determining on content of books and curriculum and so forth?
Well, you know, I think it's important to know that our curriculum is open to any parent who wants to look at it. You know, there's been some stuff in the legislature about, you know, parent portals and, you know, some things like that. And I don't know that for Wichita at least is really necessary, because we do have pretty open access for parents, whatever they want to see. I think the root of the question, though, comes down to our ability to work with parents and make sure that they're engaged in the process of educating their kids. So that's a mantra across the district, that we want to make sure we're working in conjunction and cooperation with our parents and guardians in order to meet the needs of every kid across the district. You know, we already talked about, we have diverse kids, and so we have diverse parents, and parents have different point of views on things. I do think that public schools as an institution need to become, you know, more adept at responding to, you know, not just what parents need, but what workforce needs and what we see the future being for our kids. So right now, you know, we're just starting actually today strategic planning process with you know, a big group of community members and internal stakeholders. And, you know, that strategic plan, we're really hoping to focus on defining for our district what future ready means. You know, that's been a moniker for the district for years, that we're preparing kids to be future ready. But we want to lean into that and really talk about, you know, what does the future look like and what are the skills our kids need to be ready for the future. We can't do that without parent support. We can't do that without parent input on what they value and hope to see for their student, you know, in life, you know, outside of our schools once they graduate. So I'm excited about that. I think our board is excited about that. But again, you know, back to your question, it does require us to you know, communicate with the parents as best we can and bring them along on that process so that we all together can create those good positive outcomes for kids.
What would you say would be the biggest challenge you're facing as we begin the school year here at USD 259? Biggest challenge?
You know, I think the biggest challenge, and it includes multiple things, but the biggest challenge is really still the lingering impacts of COVID. You know, we had a lot of good things going academically prior to that, and that's, you know, set us back some. Student behavior has been a topic at the forefront, you know, coming out of COVID. I think we all saw across the country, you know, people who were dysregulated and who weren't used to living in community and the impact of that. You know, you saw videos of, you know, people on airlines that were, you know, acting crazy, and people in society that were, you know, a lot of things that we didn't see as much of before COVID. And I think there really was a lingering impact of, you know, when we isolated and quarantined in order to stay safe, there was a loss of community and a loss of connection, and maybe even a loss of, you know, remembering our social norms and how we work together. And we saw the same thing in schools that everyone saw in society. So we continue to recoup from that and you know, focus on building community and building connection with kids.
Well, listen, thanks for spending some time. Welcome to the new job, and best of luck to you as the school year develops here. Our guest is Wichita School Superintendent Kelly Bielefeld. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2023. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.